Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Well, remember the old song, Someone's in the Kitchen with Dinah? It's been updated to Someone's in the Kitchen with Frank. That's right, Frank Desplosion. He is an award-winning chef, food and beverage hospitality consultant, and leadership expert with more than 25 years of global experience in luxury kitchens. He previously worked for the St. Regis brand from Marriott and also with Auberge Resorts Collection. And today, Chef Frank owns Incrementum LLC, which is a premier hospitality consultancy, and it's renowned for its unconventional business approach. He's also author, that's why I'm having him on, of Relentless Growth, Cultivating a Chef's Mindset to Professional Fulfillment. This is not your typical leadership or self-help book. It is raw, honest, and rooted in the real world of high-pressure kitchens and hospitality. It's available for pre-order at Chef Frank, which is F-R-A-N-C-K, cheffrank.com. And you can also do it eventually on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. You can follow him on LinkedIn and Instagram as well. And Chef Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ara. Thank you for having me. Hello. Welcome.
Hello. And I always admire anyone that's in the food and beverage industry because I know how hard that is. It's so labor intensive and a million things can go wrong. And usually a thousand things do go wrong. But you ignore that and you just focus on the other stuff. You get up the next day and you start all over again.
There's so much things you can control. So yes.
Yes, exactly. How is it that you don't look stressed, or are you hiding it?
Oh, I am looking stressed. No, believe me, there's stress inside. But you know, I'm the lucky one this week to be home with the kids and the wife. So there's no reason to be stressed today for sure.
Good. You're based in Connecticut, right?
I'm based out of Connecticut. Yes, right. For the most part of the last 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah, but your background is you grew up in France. Your parents were involved in the industry as well. When did you know you wanted to get involved in food and beverage and hospitality?
I would say I would not remember the exact age. A lot of things are blurry, but very young, because I started around anywhere between my 14th and my 15th birthday. I started apprenticeship in the kitchen. So I've never attended high school. I've middle school. After that, I was done with school. So I would say maybe a few years prior. So anywhere between 11, 12 will be probably reasonable to assume.
So given your background, and I mentioned some of the places you've worked at, and now you have your own consultancy, and now you've written this book, what drove you to write the book? Why do you want to share your concepts, your knowledge, your information with others in terms of hospitality and leadership?
I think that's a great question. I think the main reason is I felt like my philosophy or what I was trying to coach and mentor people that was working under my leadership, they were very responsive to it. It worked well. Some of them have adopted a similar philosophy. So I found a way and just say maybe I can get on a bigger platform. And it was easier to write a book. And when I say easier, obviously it comes with its own adversities and patience to write it. But I would say the it really came from just having something to say that could do some good in the hospitality as it is today, and figure that why not trying to put the book in the hands of someone that could be in need. And at the same time, I wish I had put my hands on this book when I was younger, so I could have speed up some of my process in order to understand what I was getting into.
Your English is very good. Where did you learn English since you grew up in France?
Oh, my goodness. I've learned English the hard way when I moved 12 years ago in Hawaii. So I've learned English and pidgin on the island of Hawaii.
Well, it's very good. So
thank you. Thank you.
The book is called, again, Relentless Growth, Cultivating a Chef's Mindset to Professional Fulfillment. I actually was working on a book called Relentless Stagnation. And okay. I never finished it. I got stagnated in the first chapter. So I'm going to defer to your expertise instead. Relentless growth. Why the need for relentless growth as opposed to, I don't know, a casual approach to food and beverage?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question. That's a good question. I think when I say relentless is the fact that you accepting that you are in incomplete state of you unfinished. You're always evolving. You're always trying to become better at something, and that's what relentless is. Not relentless in a way of intensity and magnitude and kind of go harder. It is more about learning the patience and the adaptability and understanding the process that it takes a long time in order to continue to grow. And I'm sure Ira at 30 years old was a very different Ira at 40 and different at 45. So all of those things, we evolve and we are constantly trying to approach things differently based on our external environment and the people that we share our life with. And so I'm in a place where relentless is more about accepting that it's a never-ending process. There's no destination. You're just kind of continuously trying to improve yourself to be a better version of yourself.
I think that's a better word. It's almost continuous growth versus relentless growth in a way.
I could
Relentless
be
sounds like
perceived
you're
in that way.
stubborn. Yeah, relentless sounds like you're stubborn and you're
Well,
unsatisfied and
and it's extremely applicable to someone like me, especially in the world of food and beverage, when you're living in an environment in FF&B where you are this pressure coming from all sides, from above, from under. So relentless, you kind of almost in a way organically forced in order to be relentless because of the environment you're in.
What kind of a boss are you and were you? Did you evolve over time? Are you hard on your staff? Are you demanding of your staff? Are you demanding of excellence and that relentless growth?
Yes, I have evolved for sure. Early on, when I became my own manager, before I like to think I was a leader. When I was a manager, I was, I would say the way I would describe myself is really, I was unapologetic. I was very demanding. I was not necessarily as respectful as I became. Like if someone did not necessarily do the right job, I would hold them accountable in a way to make them feel a certain way. Like I was just not the right person that you would want to have as a boss. But quickly I evolved because I realized that you cannot do it on your own. And so I've started to shift things and being more comfortable with things, realize that you could actually get results by being kind to people. You could actually get result by having clear expectation and helping them modeling their life into what they could become. And I've adopted that. I've learned a lot from my previous chef myself, of what not to do. And so I realized I remember the way I felt under that kind of leadership. And so I just say, I'm never going to be like this. So I think over time I became a very understanding leader. I became very mentoring leader. Like I was always taking the time to sit down with you during the day, sometime during the week. I spent a lot of time at works, and a lot of those time oftentimes was about just sitting down with an employee to listen to what their needs are. What are your inspiration? What is it that you're trying to achieve here? Are you here for a paycheck? Are you here to become a manager? Do you want to be here because you have? And you say, oh, I'm doing here because I'm studying. I say, okay, what are you studying on? And then you just kind of get to know getting to know people, and you end up becoming a coach, a mentor, and being a chef. I've always been very direct, transparent, very demanding still, as you mentioned it. I'm demanding for perfection.
Right.
And then I'm someone that also is not afraid to hold accountable. But there's a way to hold accountable and to deliver feedback without hurting feelings, and that's a skill that needs to be learned, and I'm lucky that I got to learn it over time.
I would think too, you're the type of person that would, if some one of your employees, you asked them, "Are you here just for the paycheck?" and they said yes, you wouldn't necessarily dismiss them at that point or her at that point. But you would say, okay, if you want your paycheck and you want a bigger paycheck, then you need to focus on these things and develop this skill and be better at this. Would I be right about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think to your point, I would not dismiss them. I think everyone has different aspiration and hospitality. When you have someone with the right attitude and wants to help the team, but is just here in order to fund his study and wants to become an architect or whatever it is, you're here for a period of time. My goal is to make sure that I'm making the environment the better, as the best it can be for you to flourish. But at the same time, all I'm expecting in return is for you to be to play well with the team, to do a good job. So I'm gonna be respectful of your journey, but at the same time, you've chose to be here, and there is expectation to be here.
Is it difficult? And I would answer my own question, but I'm going to have it you, the expert, answer it. You can have a wonderful team. You can get mentorship going. You can get everybody motivated. And it's not from that end of the restaurant. It's from the customer end where something goes wrong, or there's an obnoxious customer, or there's an issue. And that throws it off for the, not necessarily the whole evening, but for part of the evening. How do you cope with that from a leadership point of view, and that chef's mindset that you're talking about, where you have something you cannot control because it's coming from the customer side, not from the staff side?
I think it's important to giving the benefits of the doubt to the actual situation until you know more. So finding out the experience from the staff, what are they experiencing that put them into, I would say, a state of mind of stress or anxiety or just control of chaos. And you kind of do yourself. You go talk to the guest and find out what actually happened. In that moment, you kind of know what happened. You touch base with both. So you obviously recover the guest as soon as you can, because you want to make sure the guest experience is not as affected. Because at the end of the day, the guest can be wrong. We know the guest is always right, but the guest can be wrong. The thing is to make sure that they understand that it is being addressed. And then you do what you need to do. And then when you go back to the staff, depends on what it is. If it's something that requires for you to remove them from the environment so the environment can go back to being stabilized, then you do that. But if it's just say, hey, this is what the guest experienced, and he said, we're in a good place, the guest is good, go back to your job, we'll discuss it at the end of service. Just make sure you come find me before you leave tonight, so we'll make sure we touch base. I don't want to wait until tomorrow to do so. So you're just kind of making sure that you are in control of the environment related to this, and you address things in the most respectful way towards the guests and towards the employee to make sure you don't make it worse. Your goal is to de-escalate the entire situation.
Well, in the food and beverage world, and with your consulting, do you have an issue with chefs and staff that are more, I'll use this term, zen-like in their approach to service and to the cooking in the kitchen? What I mean by that is this: you have, you don't see it, but I see it. You have behind your face, there is that intensity. It's there. And I've seen it in other. I know a lot of people in food and beverage, and they all have that same look, which is a look that I don't want to ever have because I don't want the stress. So, but can you run an operation, whether it's at a five-star restaurant or a local diner, can you run an operation and do it in a calm, relaxed way, or is it almost impossible given the dynamics of the cooking, the customers, the staff, etc.?
Worse. When you get into a level of high expectation because by design, let's call it that way. If it's high expectation by design, I like to think in order to get the standard are so high that you need to have a level of I would say a level of application and execution that require for you to be very stern, very I would say demanding on what you need to be, because if a guest's going to pay $2,000 room night, when it comes to the restaurant, you got to be able to provide the level of execution of a food and beverage operation you would expect with a $2,000 room night. So I've seen chefs that are very zen, very calm. They get the result. At the end of the day, I have my way of doing it, which has provided results. I've seen some chefs that are calmer than I am, and or just more self-composed than I am. Not that I'm not, but more than I am. They tend in those environment to take a little bit longer to get the result because they're not necessarily seeking out conflict, or they're not necessarily addressing things to the staff the way they need to address. So it will take a little bit longer. to get that level. Everyone is seeking out structure. It is your role to create that structure in order to everyone on the same boat moving towards the same goal. Now, the chefs that are to this day still exist that are just losing their cool, throwing stuff across the kitchen. Those ones don't do well, especially now more than 20 years ago. When I was an apprentice, it was almost the norm. That's where you're learning him from. That's when you have the chef yelling and stuff. It means you're in a good kitchen and you're going to learn well, but you're getting affected by it. Now, these days, they just don't tend to last. Usually, human resources are on top of it. There's engagement survey from the staff throughout the year that you're getting enough feedback as an organization to know that your chef is not making the right call.
When you decided to write the book, clearly you had some of these concepts, precepts, and ideas in mind. Do you remember the moment you decided, you know, I have all this knowledge. I really need to put it together in book form? Again, it's called Relentless Growth, Cultivating a Chef's Mindset to Professional Fulfillment. Do you remember a specific time when it all came together and you said, you know what, I'm going to write a book?
I would say that there was a time when I came back from one of my project down in Florida, and I talked to my wife and say, I'm gonna write a book. And she said, really, you just came back and just like that, you're just gonna write a book? And I said, well, I've been thinking about it for a minute, but now I feel ready to write it. Like I feel like I have enough expertise, knowledge, maybe wisdom in some way to write something. But again, first of all, I've never written a book before and I'm writing it in my second language. And so I was like trying to find out, I say, maybe I need some help. So I was vulnerable enough to go seek out a book coach. So I've hired a book coach. I pitched what I had, which was not a whole lot. This is my world. This is what I want to do. I've got about 1,000 fuzzy ideas in my head. I just need to extract something. And I want to make sure that it's good enough that I can write, I don't know, a plus 200 pages out of it. And so we worked for 6 months on the blueprint and broke it down in processes with just the first exercise was to write the title of the book. I had no idea. But she said, just trust the process. Just write titles of the book. And so I had to write 10 titles, even though I didn't even know what the book was about yet. And then you go through and then you're writing the table of contents and you just say, well, what table of content of what? How many chapters? Say, well, how many chapters do you want to write? And say, I don't know. And you say, well, I said, normally in a self-help book world, you get anywhere between 8 chapters to 14 chapters. It can go up if you want. A book is anywhere between 180 pages to about 280 pages. So it really depends. So I just kind of try to follow the industry standard of what you would expect from a self-help book. And I fine-tuned the whole process from table of content. And I had a few things in mind that unraveled and unveiled as I was going through that process. Like I became extremely intentional about things. And sometime I could say, I don't know if I want to do this. I said, well, this is what I want to do. So let's find a way to make it. So really, really, she was great to guide me into my stubbornness, into what I wanted to do when I had no idea what I was doing. I just knew what I wanted to do. I knew the outcome, but I didn't know how to get there.
Of
So
course.
she was great for it.
What's the did you get to the point where you were waking up in the middle of the night and writing a note down on a piece of paper so you wouldn't forget it because you can't remember?
I did not wake up of the night, but I did do most of my writing at night, and sometime all the way until 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. I have 2 young children, and so usually my writing time was when my kids were in bed, my wife was taking care of, she was doing her own thing, and so here I have my peace of mind. I have to tell you that the 6 months of doing 6, 7 months of doing that blueprint. I had announced to everyone I was writing a book, but for 7 months, I didn't even write a word. So everyone was asking me, so how's your book coming? I said, I haven't even started yet. And the blueprint was frustrating at times. Was very, very lengthy process for me. Normally it takes anywhere between 60 to 90 days. It took me 6 to 7 months just because I wanted to get educated on the right way to do it, and I wanted to do it the right way. At some point there is like competitive titles that I have to put because everyone think they're writing the book that's never been written. The goal was really to if you have your book on the shelf with five other book. What will you book added to the conversation? And that's the way you kind of want to see it. And so I had to find books that were similar to what I wanted, but at the same time was not necessarily providing what my book would provide. And so when I did that, most people would go and find a resume of the book. I went on and read those five books in order to find, to have my opinion on this book to make the exercise more relevant.
Sure.
So like I
Your
said,
yours was more of a niche within that world.
yes.
That's yeah.
So yeah, so just going through this. So to answer your question, there was a lot of work that was being put into this until I could write the first word. And so I find myself, because of that blueprint, I was always afraid. I had heard I would say the stereotype of when you lose flow, you could lose your flow for an entire month and not being able to write. And I was so afraid of it that I was just anytime I could write, I was writing. And so writing in the morning, I was writing for 10 minutes and I was writing this. So I was thinking and I said, okay, I'm going to put it on my phone so I can develop it later. So it was at all time, very, very consuming, I guess.
I was intrigued by something you said earlier. It ties into this. When you got back from Florida and you told your wife that you wanted to write a book, and what her response was, and I thought it would be more, well, you're already busy doing all this other stuff. We need you to spend more time with the family, not all of a sudden start writing a book as well. Because you are, I don't know if you'll admit it, Frank, but you are a type A personality.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I definitely have a personality. That was the second statement that she made
Okay.
after that. But I think with all the time we've been together, she also knows that those passion projects are. It's almost like by the time I got to her, it was not an approval that I needed. It was more about I'm letting you know what's happening. So while and this is something I still have to work on. It's just being able to I'm about to impose everyone with my book writing, and the experience showed how much I needed to prioritize at times, and I'm trying to be better. It's a gross opportunity and something that I'm going to continuously work on in order to find the right balance to prioritize the kids, the marriage, the work, and then the book.
A relentless quest for balancing marriage and
Yes.
work and kids and all of that stuff. When you started thinking through and putting together these ideas, were you surprised after reading the five or so books in that general field because you wanted to make sure you were very specific and different? Were you surprised at more than one thing that you are bringing within your book? Again, it's called Relentless Growth, Cultivating a Chef's Mindset to Professional Fulfillment. Were you surprised at how many elements you could add to your book that were not covered by all these other books you researched?
Yeah, I think the I have been re most of the book that I read are all self-help books. So it is usually what I read, and I probably maybe go to 1 to 1.5 to 2 books a month. So I've been reading a lot, and I was finding
In English or French?
in English
Okay.
only. I was finding commonality into philosophy of other people in other fields. And at the same time, I would just say, man, I wished it was something about hospitality that was actually transpiring this philosophy. And recently there's the book Unreasonable Hospitality from Will Guidara that just came out and was an instant classic. He makes some wave in the world, not just the industry, but everyone was reading it and applying rules of someone that was running 11 Madison Park in New York, and suddenly you can apply it in whatever customer service oriented field you are. And so as I was reading all this book, I was just like, man, I wish this book could provide me this. And then not all the book are hospitality. I took some from Carol Dweck, who was gross mindset versus fixed mindset. And I read the entire book, and man, I was having a hard time to finish it. And not that he was not interested, it was exactly what I was seeking out, is like the difference between gross and fixed mindset. But it was written by someone that hold a PhD. So the entire the entire voice of the book was very, if you're not in the medical field and you don't have that study, you get lost into translation. You're not necessarily extracting what you wish to extract from this book. You understand the concept, but you don't really get the practical strategy. And I say, okay, that I don't get from the book. So maybe in my book, I need to make sure that I keep it relatable for someone that's never worked in the industry, that wish to work in the industry. So all of those little things, I pick and choose those major rules in order to apply my writing and find my voice.
Can you share with us one of the rules that you came up with in terms of how you cultivate that mindset? Something that our audience can pick up, and then obviously they'll follow through with reading your book.
Course. Cultivating is more, it falls down to a category of fostering. It's something that you just never stop working on and applying. You just kind of feeding it daily. Daily, you're feeding it, whatever. We either grow professionally or we grow in our private, or we grow as a parent, or we grow in our marriage, we grow in a social environment. We can all be a better version of ourselves in a different environment. So when I say cultivating a chef mindset in the subtitle, is I believe that chefs have a way of providing maybe some lesson from the world they come from that could be applicable in other fields, could be applicable to someone else that decided to go into the world of hospitality. Hospitality is a very demanding industry, still to this day, even more in some cases because of the staff shortage. So the cultivating the chef mindset is really trying to apply some of the rules that I'm providing in the book, trying to provide them in order to give you kind of a blueprint. The idea was really like in 10 years from now, you are in a very different role. You've evolved to a new person of what you are. You can still grab that book and still find something to extract from it because you wish you had done it before, or you just skip that step.
It's a good answer, but you haven't answered my question. Could you give us an example from the book?
Oh, an example of the book. So I would say one thing that the chef mindset that you will need to apply is redefining failure. There's one, I made an entire chapter out of it. It's really redefining failure. I think we are conditioned as a human being to be in a society when we are automatically and organically rating and judging someone by their ratings and by the score or by how well they did. And we are, even at school, when you start at school very young, if you're not good at school, then very quickly you're not someone that we will spend time on. And someone is great, then you do that. If you're not good at sports, and then suddenly you will not be picked, and we're going to pick the one to know. So all of those little things condition you to be afraid of failure. You're afraid of negativity. You're afraid to be judged. You're afraid to be laughed out. You're afraid of being in a position of vulnerability when you are yourself with yourself, and having to deal with your own rejection. I think it's important to know that putting the efforts towards something, you actually learning some of the best lesson in your life after a failure or after a setback. When you succeed directly, you didn't really learn anything. You just go at what you do and you just keep doing it. But when you've actually tried something out of your comfort zone and you failed at it, you actually can get something to learn from. And then you apply it better. And if you have resilience and persistence, then you're going to say, you know what, I'm going to try again tomorrow. And then you're going to continue tomorrow. And then you created that mind of discipline in order to apply yourself because you know there is a better version of yourself out on the other side of that fence. You just need to cross that fence. So that would be an example I would share with you.
Before I let you go, what would you like people to take away from reading your book?
I would say just don't try to understand everything from the book. Try to feel it. There's a lot of question and in this book that you need to ask yourself. Question I asked myself when I was growing up in my journey, and I want people to really take the time to ask themselves the question and be honest with yourself. That was the only way that you'll be able to do the work on yourself is you really being honest with yourself and having a higher self-awareness.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Frank Despotien. He is author of Relentless Growth, Cultivating a Chef's Mindset to Professional Fulfillment. It's available for pre-order at Chef Frank. It's F-R-A-N-C-K, cheffrank.com. It'll be available also on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And you can follow him on LinkedIn and Instagram. And Frank, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Ira. Much appreciated. Had a great time with you.
And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.